Batu, Barada, Nikto.
You must remember those words.
Gordon's alive.
You know what the Turing test is?
I know Kung Fu.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Patreon, Stories Out of Time and Space. This is some bonus content where Julie and I jump on something connected to something we've done on the main feed. And today we're going to be talking around Transformers. And as always, I'm Scott Weatherly, and I am joined, as always, by Julian Darius. Julian, how are you doing? You okay?
Julian Superior. Scott Inferior.
I was going to try and do a voice, but I'm not going to because some of them are too iconic for this. But we can roll out and talk about here you go, the 1984 animation, the G1 animated series of Transformers. We're going to cover the first three episodes that are called More Than Meets the Eye.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And I've got some questions for you. Not so much about, there'll be questions in there because you're obviously the Transformers fan. And I've watched all this. Like, I was a kid, I watched all this and I've seen these.
You've got the DVD, brother.
I have got it right here. I was going to say, I've got them. but one of the things and very quickly, I want to jump on this because the plot is pretty much irrelevant, but we will cover some of the basics. each episode has there's a voiceover. There's an intro and an outro narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I noticed I hadn't really clocked or spotted before, the end of episode two declares that the next episode, which is the final part, is actually, mm-hmm. says, instead of not saying the final part of More Than Meets the Eye, the final episode or the final part of Transformers. Mm-hmm. And so I was curious because I think season one's probably 16 episodes long, I believe, something like that.
14.
Yeah. But what's the intention with these 16, were these three episodes just a pilot kind of thing that was being put out?
So the thing is, the three episodes aired 17th, 18th, and 19th of September in 1984. Mm. October 6th, my birthday, was when the season one proper began. So there was almost a month delay between these and the rest of the season, right?
Right.
And I don't know if you recall, but a lot of shows did this back then. I mean, if you think about G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe starts with that five-part miniseries with mm-hmm. Mass Device, and then it goes into its time passes, and then there's a five-part series that's like the Return of Cobra, where they've got another device, and then and even like Challenge of the GoBots, which started just before this, starts with a five-episode story that is remarkably similar in some ways to this. But so I think that was the idea. I think the only thing that's kind of surprising is that clearly, they already had the series on order because,
a month later is quite quick in animation terms, really.
Right. But if you think about it, 1984, when the comic comes out, the comic is it's a four issue miniseries.
Yeah.
And it's four issues bimonthly. You have to wait 2 months. And then by the end of that, they're like, oh, this is selling like hotcakes. This is moving millions of copies. Mm. And so they promoted it to an ongoing and to monthly status. But so Transformers. So, initially there was an order for three episodes, not even a five-part thing like G.I. Joe got and GoBots got, but a three-part. And obviously at some point that got, transformed into a 16-episode season.
Yeah. Cause I have to say, because I watching these three episodes, I've watched a couple of later episodes more recently. I did jump into a couple of later ones, only within season one. And a few people have said, oh, you should have gone and checked out season two, because season two is where it really hits it, sort of like, you know, is improved. But there's so much in these first couple of episodes. I'm like, oh, this all states. And I was like, I remember this character and that character and you know, the designs. And it's just so, like, the nostalgia is fantastic. But I was watching it, you know, to critique. I was looking to sort of like, you know, not for flaws or anything, but I was looking at it sort of with observant. And it's funny that you do watch it and you sort of go, there are some really bizarre, there's some really bizarre dialogue in this at times that I'm like, I've never thought about that before. Like, that's a really bizarre thing. And the first one kind of stumped me. And they're not big. Like, I can see it doesn't matter to a kid. Yeah. But if you're writing this, some of them don't make much sense. And I wonder if the dialogue was written and recorded, then they did the animation and just haven't quite matched up. So when they're on Cybertron, and I kind of love their Cybertron designs, they transform into sort of like alien craft or this other thing. And there's one bit when Bumblebee gets hit and he says, oh, it's just my axle. And I'm going, you fly. What have you got an axle for? Like, what does your axle do?
Yeah, he's like a hovercraft kind of thing.
And I was like, that doesn't make much sense. And so there's a few things like that where I'm like, and I also love that.
But also, like, do you have nerve centers in your axles? Like, it's never really established. Also, how are you seeing in robot mode? Right, like, if they're always talking about, like, my optics, I'll pull, you know, Transformers the movie, I'll pull out your optics.
Yeah,
you know. Okay, so what are your optics? And I mean, the key thing to understand about the Transformers is that it's stupid. Okay, like. And I'm saying this as the biggest Transformers fan. Like, the Transformers have never made sense. Nothing about the Transformers makes sense. Everything that's been built up, and I love the Transformers. I mean, I want to write it and do it right. But, you know, the key, I mean, they're robots in disguise, but they're constantly, like, why do you have one guy who turns into a UFO later on, right? Like, these are not the best disguises, dude.
Yeah,
you know.
Let's get to that, right? Because you say about the robots. So I want to touch a point because I love, there is something like there's 3 points I want to very quickly, because they're all connected. I love the designs. I love the animated designs of these characters. I can see why they caught on, because they are sort of, it's very iconic. They're very simple, but very effective, very colorful. And I just go, oh yeah, that's Starscream. Oh, that's Megatron. They're so iconic that they can just, they all have that ability that you could draw them as a silhouette and you would know the character. And so I think the character designs in all of Transformers has always been incredibly well done. And so I've always been impressed. And obviously, so the idea of transforming them into different things, that the Decepticons are all sort of like war machines or sort of parts of, you know, for espionage or whatever, or, you know, those kinds of things. And then the Autobots are just regular vehicles. Fine, I'm comfortable with that. But one of the things I find confused me in this, and I had completely forgotten, is the amount of times that they just seem to turn up in robot form, and you're like, so you're not even going to bother trying to, you know, disguise, robots in disguise. You're just going to turn up and be like, no, robots with guns is what we are. And that sort of made me chuckle this time. The amount of times they just turn up at a human place and just like, ha-ha, we have big guns. And you're like, oh, no subterfuge. No.
They're robots in disguise. But, you know, by the end of the first episode, they're flying around at a oil rig.
Yeah.
You know, they're being seen by everyone. They're transparently interacting with humans. By the end of the first episode, there's no disguises left. There's no need for any of this.
No.
None of this makes any sense.
And yeah.
I mean, the other thing is how roughshod and incompetent this really is, right? So, I mean, I'm a fan. I mean, I've seen these episodes relatively recently before this viewing. I'm sort of ashamed to say, I find it a little hard going at times. And it's really only the first half of the first episode that's on Cybertron,
through
the crash and whatever, and then maybe parts of the revival sequence that I would really defend. I think that, like you said, the design of Cybertron is great. Yes, there's a lot that's not worked out yet. That doesn't make sense. I mean, you've already got like mass shifting problems where Bumblebee gets into the back of Jazz's robot mode, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, and Bumblebee was always sort of a problem for that, where he'd be depicted as slightly higher than a human, even though he turns into a car a human can go into.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are problems. But I think that section is the part that I really like and I really remember. And everything else is, look, obviously the fight on the dam in episode 2 is sort of iconic. Mm. That's where, you know, the axe and mace on a string, on a chain come from. You know, that's sort of an iconic sequence. But these are not good stories. And constantly, characters constantly just show up in other locations. It's not at all clear. Like, at one point, I mean, it's very episodic. It's very, like, even though these are three episodes, they're really like six separate sequences in which the Autobots and Decepticons fight six times in six completely separate locations. And the goal is usually that Decepticons want fuel and energy and the Autobots have to stop that.
Right. Can I jump on that point? Because I want to make a point about that. And because it crossed my mind that this was originally written as more episodes.
Could have been.
Because the pace of that first episode, like, they're like, and we're on Cybertron. Now we're not on Cybertron and we're doing this. 4 million years later, now we're these robots and now we're doing this. And I was like, oh my God, like, this moves at a real belt. But like, this feels like the first episode should end with them crashing on Earth and stuff.
It absolutely should. But I mean, it's possible that this was a five, and I don't know, it's possible this was a five part, because it's weird that it's three. You know, so G.I. Joe, GoBots, everything was, I mean, everything in the 80s for American television started as these five part things, because you could run it every day for every weekday for the kids. So it's probably the case that five parts got shrunk into three. But, you know, you're right. It's it makes you think, like, oh, I see. This has been a problem in this franchise from this early. It's not just Michael Bay who's like, how did they get here? What are they doing again?
It doesn't matter.
They're fighting. They're giant robots and they're fighting. Chill, dude.
One of the things I am going to give Michael Bay a compliment, and I didn't think this was going to happen. But one of the things I noticed in others is abundantly evident, or abundantly absent, I would say, is that the Decepticons, as you say, they're flying around, which then sort of makes Starscream and the aerial robots obsolete anyway. But they attack a power station, they attack a mine, they do all this other stuff. At no point does any governmental military force turn up and be like, we've heard that these huge alien robots are attacking our sort of infrastructure and we're going to do something about it. There's no military presence in this at all in these first three episodes. And I just find that really bizarre.
You're very right. And that's a very good point. I have to say that in this era, I was reading the comics, and the comics were more canon to me than the TV show.
Yeah.
And those first four issues of the comics, you know, first of all, they're not all flying around, right? You know, they're not all Superman just flying around, you know, and it's not really clear, like, can they fly or not? It always depended episode by episode, scene by scene. I mean, their powers are totally undefined. But in the comics, you remember, like, in that Spider-Man issue, that's necessary because the government has surrounded the Decepticon base with tanks, you know? Right. So obviously,
I will say, because Chris Claremont was heavily involved in, obviously, was it Chris Claremont or?
No, I don't think so.
Was it Neil Adams?
Bob Budzinski.
Yeah.
You're thinking of Denny O'Neill.
Denny O'Neill, wrote the one of those original pitches, didn't he? And some of his ideas. Yeah. So you can tell that, like, I've read those comics, and more thought was definitely put into the comics than into the cartoon at this point, anyway.
Well, and what's weird is that, like, let's take a step back and just acknowledge, like, this is the dumbest concept ever. Okay. I mean, what's happened is, you know, conglomeration of interests. How, you know, basically Takara, you know, now Takara Tomy, Takara and Hasbro have collaborated to bring their toys to the U.S., but Takara does not have enough from two different lines, right? So the main lines, and I mean, and we'll see soon toys from other lines that and other producers, you know, Jetfire problem and all this stuff. But the main thing is they've got a line of car robots, and then they've got a line of micro change of like stuff that turns into guns and, you know, earbud, you know, headphones and watches and real life stuff, right? So one is like a real life stuff line, and one is, you know,
vehicles cars. And things, yeah.
And so, you know, what they've basically done is like said, okay, these all turn into robots. Who cares about scale? Who cares about your stupid lines? Let's bring them in. The reason why they look so iconic in profile is because of their shitty transformations. So what we now call kibble, you know, of like the wings hanging off the back, the doors hanging off the back, it can be charming. Parts of it, you know, the thing, parts of it define that character's look, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they are also part of a sloppy transformation where, you know, like the legs don't move at all. You just shift the wings back and its arms are on the underside. And guess what? Now they're slightly articulated.
Yeah.
At the shoulder only.
Yeah. I have to say, one of the things I did as I watched these, I went and Googled because I was like, I had some of these. I did have Transformers toys. I want to talk about the usually the corporate commercialism of these things. But I went and had a look. I had an Optimus Prime. The three I remember I had an Optimus Prime. I had a Trailbreaker, the green truck, and I had Jazz. Or was he? Yeah, he was the Porsche. What was the police car?
Yeah, Jazz. The police car was Prowl.
Prowl. Yeah. So I had a Prowl as well.
Okay.
Those are the three I had, and the Dotson
brothers.
Yeah, and a friend of mine had a Megatron and a Starscream. So like they had like I had a friend who had like the Decepticons and I had the Autobots. I was quite clear on that. But one of the things I find I was I remember these and I went and Googled and I remember and Trailbreaker in particular, who looks kind of cool as a truck. I was like, oh yeah, it's a green truck. It's got the back of it and all this other stuff. And then I saw a transformed robot version. I was like, oh, now I've got memories of how crap I used to think this toy was, and I always kept it in car mode because it looks awful as a robot. Like, Optimus kind of looks kind of cool as a robot, although a little bit clunky, but kind of iconic.
Out of proportion, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it looks like a truck, and I love the fact that the front used to sort of come down and all this other stuff. Like, so I had that, and I had the same thing with Prowl. I think Prowl, I remember sort of, because it had the bump, his chest was the front of the car, and I remember that looking kind of cool, but I remember but Trailbreaker looking awful, and I remember looking at these and going like, I remember leaving most of these in vehicle mode most of the time because I think the robots looked a little bit funky. But I do honestly think that the designs for the cartoon and for the comic and stuff are really good, and I do think though that transition that they've tried to make them look a little bit more animatingly appealing. So they can be flexible and mobile whilst maintaining that robot-y look. It actually really works. I don't know who designed them and made them for the cartoon, but I do. They still, to me, hold up as designs.
Well, this design work is really important. And it's another, to me, it's another moment where they just say, what we're doing, this is like a shitty, thankless job, right? Like, this is... Nobody cares, you know, like obviously this is, you know, the most half-assed line imaginable, right? You know, just slapping these things together, there's no explanation of size, you know, like all the stuff that we like is coming from Denny O'Neill and Marvel. You know, and so, you know, this thing that you're saying about like designs, and first of all, it applies to even Optimus Prime, where they fill in his
size
where, you know, his arms come out of. But in animation, they always put some sort of magic filler there. So now, of course, that filler has to be reproduced in all the new toys, right, these days. And then, you know, you even see, like, his hands sliding out during that painful transformation sequence after the mine explosion. Mm. And of course, his hands were a separate thing that plugged in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you kept.
I lost
them in
both
the
of mine.
Everybody lost mine. Did.
Yeah.
I didn't, but I, you know, yeah, I think one broke. Mm. The peg broke that it went in. I mean, and they looked his, yeah, his arms could have looked better. You know, having parts forming, as that's called, you know,
yeah.
On your main guy is not the best. But the main ones that were affected were, you know, obviously Ratchet and Ironhide, who have no heads. So one thing is that a lot of these toys were designed to have human riders. So the original toys were made to have like a little chrome guy in it or something. And so they would take those guys out, but they would still leave because it's already, they have the same mold that you'd leave the seats. Like, so like all those Decepticons and Dinobots have places for a guy to ride in them as mecha, but they're not mecha. So, I mean, this is so dumb, right? But so like Ratchet and Ironhide transform basically like into a repair bay kind of station with this weird, like the they fold out and then there's this weird, like kind of like,
I'm remembering this for Ironhide now. Yes.
They do not look anything like those animated versions. So what happened is basically they're like, there's no head, right? Like, how do we make this a character? They're like, just do your own designs. So they decided to just design their own guy who looks nothing like the toy in those cases. And then the final example, which is, you know, probably the most egregious, it never made sense. It's cool that Megatron turns into a weapon, right? Yes. A gun. It doesn't make sense that then he shrinks down to become a Walter. I mean, this is, but yet shrinks down enough to be held by Starscream, who's a giant. It's not clear, you know. But like,
is there ever an episode where he's handled and used as a gun by a human?
There is in the comics, but I can't recall in the TV show that happening. But it probably happened at some point.
Mm.
But you know, just like Dr. Arkaville comes in, and you know, I don't know. Somebody who knows more than me would have to say that. But, you know, let's keep in mind, his toy was so abysmal. His head, if you look at that toy's head, is so, like, can you imagine if that were the head of Megatron in the actual show? We would not remember the Transformers. And let's be clear, like, there's a famous Punisher toy that was made that shot stuff with a trigger crotch.
Out of his crotch, yeah.
Megatron looks like that, and Megatron has a trigger for a crotch.
Yes.
And it's sticking out like a penis.
Yeah, from,
you know. Oh my God, can you imagine if they animated that? Like, I'm glad that they went their own way. Megatron looks cool as F, you know, in robot mode. But I don't know. I mean, I'm glad they took these liberties, but also, like, the fact that you had to makes no sense. Like, there should have been some corporate level decisions.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree. And I think this you know, it carries problems forward, doesn't it? That somebody else is then going to deal with. Because even in the show, like when they after they've crash landed, you know, they crash land on Earth and they're there for 4 million years, and they then sort of when you know accidentally revived, and the machine sort of wakes up and is like, you know, explore, and it starts finding stuff for them to look like.
And, I love that little satellite guy.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. Yeah. And it finds the shit. It finds the plane that turns. It's not Starscream. It's one of the other ones, isn't it? Into the jet and revives him, and then
the
sort
seekers.
Of yeah, and it sort of creates them. Then they save, but it shows it for different ones. But the one it doesn't show, as it says, oh, we've got to save Megatron. You don't go. Oh, he doesn't go off and be like explore, and then see a gun. And I mean, like,
there's a holdup going on.
Yeah, it's a bank robbery, or some woman's being mugged, or whatever. But like, yeah, there's, you know, but it seems to look for relevant mass when it's out exploring, apart from for Megatron, which is never addressed.
And Soundwave and the tapes.
Yeah.
So don't forget. By numbers.
Yeah.
Right? So like,
I do love that though. I was wanted to point about Soundwave because he obviously becomes the tape decks, the personal Walkman kind of thing. And is it Spike? Yeah, it is Spike, isn't it? The kid.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, finds him, takes him into the Autobot base or like whatever,
the Ark.
Into the Ark,
and then sets him down.
Yeah, and then leaves him there. And it's just like, oh, that's weird. Leave that there. And when it transforms, because it has to deal with the mass shifting, because obviously Spike's brought him in, leaves on the side. And when he transforms, like it does, it sort of leaps out, doesn't it? And sort of like becomes this giant robot that then swipes for him. And as you're watching the animation, like you can sort of tell there must have been someone in the animation studio that's going, sorry, we've got to do what? We've got to turn this small thing into this giant. How the hell does that work? Oh, just don't focus on it too much. Like, have it done off screen.
Well, you kind of make it grow while parts are shifting out.
Yeah.
And, you know. Yeah, but clearly, like, there's mass shifting going on. You know, if you have the technology to do that, you know, why do you need energy? Because you're creating mass from nothing. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of... But to even ask that question is, like, three times... you know, absurd, you know, because there's so many things that don't make sense. Yeah, I mean, so it's weird to think about, but, you know, we think about I kind of like the idea of Autobots versus Decepticons, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And especially if you think about, like, I was a huge fan of the GoBots. And the GoBots, basically all their toys, with the exception of special toys, were all the exact same size. There was no, like, different levels of toys. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, like $5 gets you, you know, a toy that's, you know, 3-4 inches. They all were basically the same size, no matter what they turned into. But, you know, at least you knew, like, you get the bosses, the leaders, for like the same $5 as anyone else. One of the reasons why Transformers succeeded was, ironically, how stupid it was. That it was a combination of all these different lines that should never have gone together. And so they were priced differently.
Yeah.
You know, but when you look at the Decepticons, so you can understand. So the Autobots start as just cars, which I like the fact that they were like the underdogs. Whereas compared to the GoBots, the good guys are like the police and the bad guys are the renegades, right? Where it like instantly flips the Star Wars thing we were trained on of like the rebels are the good guys.
It reestablishes a level of authority. Yeah, it reestablishes the authority, doesn't it? But the, because if I remember, isn't the leader of the GoBots a jet plane?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leader one. And Psykill, you know, also like, why do you have your bad guy leader turn into a little motorcycle? Like, you know, why did they do this? I thought, but at least that's better than a gun. I mean, you know, it makes no sense. And, you know, by the way, a jet is a lot cooler than I turn into a cabo, you know? Let's be honest. Although I mean, obviously Optimus Prime is iconic. I'm not trashing Optimus. But, you know, I mean, I'll feel guilty, but no. So Transformers, you think about like the idea of the Autobots as the sort of, it doesn't really establish what's going on Cybertron and who's winning, just that the Decepticons attack the Autobots. That's basically all you hear. But I like the idea that in my mind, the Autobots were underdogs and they were like the transportation vehicles of the society. And the military vehicles ganged up on them and said, like, hey, we're in charge now. And that was my headcanon. And I love that idea. But then, of course, instantly, as soon as the show actually begins, you've got dinosaurs and jets that are Autobots. And, you know, this goes out the window instantly.
Yeah. I would say one of the things too about the wider show and stuff compared to these first episodes, when they're setting things up, the other thing I know it's not just about the designs, but the color scheme as well, and how they've set this thing up. That all the Autobots are bright, mostly primary colors. There's some whites and stuff in there, but they're red and yellow, and you know they're sort of there's a lot there. There's no sort of what you know. None of them are like, you know, gray or whatever. But then the Decepticons, you know, like Megatron's gray, there's purples and there's sort of like darker colors and all this sort of stuff. Like, they've clearly set like a color scheme to sort of differentiate them. And I think even that, I'm like, wow, that, you know, it may have been coincidence, whatever, but like it works.
No, that's clearly deliberate.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's so true that in later lines, like, you know, it becomes a cliche of like, especially I adore Skywarp's colors, the sort of like black jet with sort of purple trim. Those colors work so perfect for me. You know, obviously like Shockwave, who you briefly see in cameo here, is purple. And those colors, those dark, you know, colors, it becomes such a cliche that like people on later shows and later lines will think of like, we got to break out of this because there are too many Decepticons that have shared those similar colors that are really effective together. There is some overlap, like, you know, Thundercracker is sort of like blue with red. You know, obviously like Laserbeak, but Laserbeak has some grays in there and black, right? That sort of sets it, like Soundwave is a blue, but he's kind of like a richer dark blue.
Yes.
And overall, when you see the two lines together, it's really clear who's the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah, they've made it really, you know, they've made it quite clear, and I like that they've done that. I think it's quite, you know, clever. Just the design work in that, I mean, is like you say, is really cool. What one of the things I wanted to talk about though is, and again, I spotted it more this time than I've ever done before because I've never thought about it. But I've got a fascination with this period in the 80s and commercial cartoons. You know, because we're talking about Transformers, but there was He-Man, there was the, you know, the, like you said, the GoBots were an attempt, Mask, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, you know, Real Ghostbusters was another, you know, obviously, there was just this idea that sort of like, oh, hang on, kids are watching cartoons, we can basically sell the crap out of all this, which I am convinced comes from Star Wars. They were like, we can merchandise anything. You know, and there was obviously Care Bears and you know, My Little Pony, like no gender, neither gender was safe.
I love this stuff too. I need to interject at this point that the reason Star Wars showed the power of merchandising, but the reason this happened, but Star Wars was not on TV. Mm-mm. The reason why this happened on TV was because of Ronald Reagan. And as much as I hate Ronald Reagan, I owe my childhood to Ronald Reagan. deregulating children's television.
So that
deregulation,
yeah,
it used to be they had lots of rules about like fair time and not selling to kids and, you know, and all this stuff. Reagan just said, let people broadcast whatever the hell they want. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, that means we can do 30-minute commercials for toys, right? We can piggyback and, you know, create monopolies and, you know, synergies that were illegal before.
Yeah,
so but, that's why the floodgates open.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, yeah, because it happens all at once, which is weird because, and you know my, you know, you know my love for the Satanic Panic and how I find that whole period fascinating, because the irony of that then obviously with his Christian right was there are two or there's three actually, it's a series of three books written by this evangelical guy all about how Saturday morning cartoons, it's called, I think they're called like the Evils of Saturday Morning, or the other one's called Evils in Your Toy Box, and then the other one's about games and covers like D&D as well as sort of like early computer games, and it's all about these evils. And that first one, the Evils on Your TV, covers all of these cartoon things about how they have satanic imagery in each of them, to the extent of I've looked through the book and been going like, oh, I've got to see this, none of it pans out, it's all garbage, it's complete nonsense. But like you say, it's quite funny that Reagan, who was running on that Christian right platform in many ways, sort of like, you know, is fueling both sides. He's playing both sides. You know, he's going, oh, we're going to all the corporate stuff, but there's evil. But yeah, you're right. This created my childhood over here as well. You know, all these cartoons. Only certain ones made it over here, though, which is quite interesting. So I you know.
You didn't get Rambo?
Oh, we got Rambo later
on. Rambo
in the later 80s.
That was to sell toys too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so was the RoboCop cartoon and Police Academy. And they got some terrible cartoons. But and one day we might cover at least one of those. but what I think is interesting is Transformers came over here. He-Man came over here, like big time. They were the big two. Thundercats was the other big one for Britain. But we didn't get, or the ones that never made it big over here was G.I. Joe and Mask. And I do wonder if the fantasy elements of He-Man, Thundercats and Transformers, is easy to translate to the UK child audience, because the others have sort of like G.I. Joe and the and Mask are really sort of built around sort of that, I think that there's an American military kind of thing there. They just didn't exist in this country at the time, and just probably would have just like gone straight over a lot of people's heads.
So did you not get those cartoons at all?
We didn't get any G.I. Joe until the 90s. So G.I. Joe wasn't broadcast over here probably until 91, 92, something like that.
I'm pretty sure that had to do with government censorship.
Quite probably.
Especially of violence that was not fantasy violence.
Yeah.
For both those shows. Because there was a lot of time and effort spent on G.I. Joe in Britain.
Mm.
And it was called Action Force. The Action Force line was the G.I. Joe line in Britain. Interestingly enough, there are a few toys that were exclusive to Britain that were really awesome as part of their Action Force line, but they, and they put out a comic. There was an Action Force comic when you were a kid. You might not remember it, but I got it by mail in the States. And it was, the usual sort of like weekly with like 8-page sort of stories that, as an American, it was like, why did I pay $2 for this? But they recast those characters, and it was like they all those characters were now British and functioning on British soil as part of Action Force.
Okay.
But I guess it would have been too much to translate. There were some regulatory issues with G.I. Joe in Britain.
I can imagine, because even we had Action Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Action Man being a toy, but Action Man was not, because obviously G.I. Joe and all those other figures following the Star Wars model, were they 3¾ inches, that sort of size? Mm-hmm. Action Man was like, I don't want to say it, was Barbie size.
Yeah, it was like 7 inches tall or something.
Yeah, it was like a full thing. And he had...
original G.I. Joes in the 60s.
Exactly. And they took basically a lot of those things, because he had the eyes that moved, the little switch. Or you could get one that you could look through his head, and it would be like a little, like a telescope that was terrible. But you bought clothes. But the point, one of the key things about Action Man for Britain was he was a British soldier. And everything that he got with, it was no fantasy. He didn't come with like a fantasy helicopter and that stuff. It was all, he came with full fatigues, and you dressed him as a soldier. Like, it was more a case of like, he's Action Man. He is a soldier. So he has soldiery things. It wasn't like he has a laser gun. That came later. It did, I had an Action Man, and it was all like really badly made, like army uniforms that sort of fit on him and stuff. So I was much more interested in the sort of the fantasy stuff, like you say, the sort of the Transformers and Thundercats and those other things. Some of those just they were the hot toys. Like, they were the hot toys. Like, I got my Optimus Prime as a Christmas present, and I remember my parents have said since, like, there was like people like traveling long distances to go and find these toys in 84, 85, whatever Christmas it was. 85.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, absolutely. And there were guys who you just like never saw in stores. I had an Optimus, and I think it was one of those things where it's like, oh my God, I can't afford this, but we are seeing this here. We have to get this. Like, you, mom and dad don't understand. We have to get this.
Yeah.
I may never see this again. It was crazy. And these toys, when you think about the units sold, it's flabbergasting, the millions of units sold. I mean, today, a toy line is a hit if it's, in five figures, if it's solid, if it's into six figures, you're like, they've sold 100,000 of these. That's pretty good. You need a lot of sales to return the cost of these molds.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work on a small scale. But it's really hard to get toy lines to do that. Back then, mail order catalogs,
quantities
that were oh, pumped out. It was unbelievable.
And the numbers of lines, and that's the thing. Because again, one of the things, you know, you say about the units and about this, yeah, there must have been, you know, like thousands and thousands of these things, and globally as well. You know, these things took off. But I'm what I find interesting is, I think Transformers obviously set a bit of a trend, because I don't know which came first, Transformers or He-Man, but He-Man has a sort of a similar story of it was created for something else, didn't quite mm-hmm. work, and so they were like, oh, I think it might have been like a Conan, intended yeah. to be like a Conan thing, and then they were like, this isn't going right. to work, but someone else was like, ah, but I'll create a whole mythology behind it, and I'll do it different, and then we'll make the cartoons and stuff. And that became a massive thing as well. Like, you know, you could get obviously all the He-Man figures and
So He-Man was already out. He-Man is the animated series starts in 83.
Right.
So the previous year.
Because I remember He-Man. Yeah, yeah.
I do too. Now, what's interesting to me is that all these shows suck. And I've gone back and watched.
Don't say that.
No, they all suck. Yeah, yeah. They all suck. Like, look, I love Transformers. This is where it all began, right? Like, mm. I've read those early comics. I still probably read them once a year, you know. I've read them a million times, you know. I have a lot of these toys today. Having said that, like, the number of animation errors, you know, in this, like, how did this get to air? The times where, you know, somebody is speaking, but you're being shown somebody else, where, you know, I mean, at one point when the Decepticons invade the Ark, you have Optimus Prime reacts, and, you know, you sort of like pan to the side and Optimus Prime reacts, and then you get Megatron shrieking as they're invading the Ark, and it just repeats the same pan.
Yes.
With Optimus Prime. It's one. I mean, I remember that as a kid. Even as a kid, I thought, oh, this is shitty. I mean, at one point, you know, and like, look, Masters of the Universe, I can't even watch it. It doesn't even make sense. It's like watching Pokemon, you know, where I'm just like, I don't understand what's happening. How did my brain watch this? And, you know, like, I mean, G.I. Joe is a little, it's very, very silly and fantasy, but, despite it being too realistic for Britain, it you know, it's like laser guns and magic devices and stuff, but at least there's a story there. I mean, like Transformers, at least these three episodes, and GoBots is actually, because it was Hanna-Barbera, it was actually much more professional than this, actually, even though the characters are cooler here. But like at one point in this story, they just go like, oh, yeah, you know those magical glowing crystals of Burma?
Yeah.
You know, that like everybody in America, no, everyone in the world knows, right? The magic crystals of Burma. Let's go get those.
I love
they're
it.
Such a great power.
They are the greatest energy source on the planet. You go, all right, cool. And everyone seems to trek off to Burma to get these crystals. And you're just like, well, yeah. All right.
Trigger mind sequence. Like, yeah. You know, I mean, it's not even clear how they get there. Again, like, no, they're not spotted on any radar, you know, like, no governments intervene. You know, these crystals have existed forever. Everybody seems to know about them. And yet, like, Burma hasn't been colonized by, you know, the West that, like, control the crystal supply.
According to this, Burma should be sort of like akin to the Arab states, where it's just like, no, we have got billions in energy resources. Yeah, I do kind of, that did make me chuckle when they were like, Burma. I'm like, Burma was the best choice. All right, okay.
But they just breeze on past it. And everything is just, they breeze. It was like, you're talking about the pacing. And just like, they just breeze on past everything.
Yeah.
Even, I kind of like the oil rig scene. Even though I don't like the introduction of Spike and Sparkplug that way. They just come back to the Ark. There's no discussion of like, it's like, yeah, we'll bring those two humans back to the Ark. But like straight up, there's an oil rig that's on fire. That's been destroyed in the Gulf. It's not even clear where it is. Like, you remember the Gulf oil spill? That was international news for months.
Yeah.
Like, this should be a giant news story. And it's just like, that was an action scene. We pinned Optimus underneath some wreckage. that was the drama there. On to the next thing.
Yeah,
it's really dumb.
It is, and I have to admit, these first, I might actually go and watch some later episodes because it does feel like you know, they move from things so quickly, and there's some of the, but what, and some of the things that really made me stop was the inconsistencies in the ability to be given damage or take damage.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like you mentioned previously, sort of the Optimus rolling down the hill with the mine explosion, and that's all he does. He rolls down a hillside. He's like, ah, as he rolls down the hillside. Previous to that, like, he's been shot at, he's been thrown from the sky, he's been in a battle with a mace and an axe. Like, he's had all this stuff going on. And then he basically gets, like, rubble throws him down a hill. And then all of a sudden he's like, I can't transform and I can't do this. I'm like, what? Like, this really doesn't feel like this is supposed to be, like, tough. But, like, now you're saying he trips and bangs his knee. It felt like akin to, like, you know, the Peter Griffin joke, which is like, and I was like, this is ridiculous. But it's not just him. Like, it happens a few times where characters, like, in one episode, you know, they can get through fire and they're putting out massive oil fires or other stuff. And then the next one, they get hit by some rocks and it levels them. And you're just like, what's their, like you said, what's their power set? Like, how does this work? I don't understand it.
Yeah, you're completely right. And this continues forever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know, we review Transformers, the movie, you know, for Stories Out of Time and Space. And there, you know, one shot from Galvatron, kills Starscream and makes Starscream turn into dust. Galvatron will go on to shoot plenty of people,
yeah. You know,
none of whom turn into dust. Megatron, at times, a blast from his fusion cannon is treated as like a very serious thing. If it's not, it could be fatal to any Transformer. If it's not fatal, it's, you know, something's going to put you in hospital, right? Or, you know, med bay. But other times, it's just a glance. It's not a big deal.
It's a glancing blow. Yeah.
Yes. And the same thing happens. I mean, even at one point in one of the fights, one of the humans throws a rock and it knocks the gun off of, you know, one of the seekers.
Starscream. Yeah.
Starscream can't handle a rock thrown by a human. Now, that human had to throw that rock. Forget. The human had to throw that rock at least 40, probably 60 feet into the air. Mm. Right. If we're going with scale, which even that doesn't make any sense because a jet,
yeah,
the jet that Starscream should be like 60 feet tall, you know, but never mind that. And then the gun that's on the ground is run over and it's like made of paper mache.
Yeah.
I loved running over it.
Yeah, I loved that. That like someone drives over it, and I was like, "Wow, that was a piece of crap." That's how that sort of like falls apart, much like the toys. But
true.
Yeah, no, but we are, you know, poking fun at this, and I know you said some of those animation things though. To me now, and you're right. You are right. These do suck, and I don't think I could sit through like the entire season. However, I do think it's about where you're going, because I can watch the real Ghostbusters again and again and again, right? And I do. I've got, I think, almost all the episodes, you know, bought from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a similar thing in that where there'll be, you know, like you'll hear, you know, Pete Venkman's voice, but you'll see Ray. And there's a few things like that, or one of the ones I see it in this, and I've seen it in all the animations, is the sort of the audio not lining up with the visual. So you either see, for example, Slimer coming flying down a corridor, and then a literal second later, the scream comes with it after, and you're like, oh, they're not even correcting that. Like, they're not going to bother. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. And there's a few times in this where you'll see someone fire the gun, and then a fraction of a second later, you hear the noise and stuff, and you're like, they're not that bothered that it doesn't, because they know this is just more of a commercial. That's the point. The designs are the point. But I kind of find that charming in a nostalgic kind of way. What we are running out of time. One thing I wanted to just wanted to touch on and really ask your opinion or your thoughts on was Peter Cullen as Optimus Prime is as iconic now as I think Mark Hamill as the Joker Batman. And the fact that I can't remember his name is disgusting to me. But Conroy, you know, his Batman. Like, there's certain voice actors that just voice becomes so iconic with that character.
And you I think say that, this, but I'm not a big fan. I'm not. I think the Batman animated series is you know not as great as people think.
No, but what so, mean is but what I mean is those people become as linked with that. Yeah, no, but I mean I people become linked with that character. So like Mark Hamill's linked with the Joker.
I know. And, I don't have those associations.
Kevin Conroy. And, but, yeah, yeah. But that yeah. that became a thing, and I think Peter Cullen is. Becomes the Optimus Prime voice, the extent that he obviously did it for the films and stuff for a period. But what I find is the other characters are more interesting in that he, you know, Peter Cullen goes for that sort of like John Wayne-esque kind of thing, which is still finding his feet in some of the episodes because in others he's a little jokey or whatever. But I was watching as I was watching this, some others are just trying different things from like episode to episode. Like I swear to God, they were like, oh, he's trying the John Wayne thing. I'm gonna try like a Jimmy like a James Stewart voice. Someone else tries a James Mason voice where I'm just like, he's like and all these sort of like celebrity, almost like celebrity impersonated for like an episode, and that gets dropped. And so there is a point where I'm like, it's not until episode two that I recognize. Oh, that's the voice. I recognize not just Optimus Prime, but that's Ironhide. That's Jazz. I recognize Prowl or whatever. They're the voices. They're sort of tickling my nostalgia buttons. But in that first episode, like they're really just going for anything at times. It's really funny. And I think it's, I don't know which one it is, but yeah, there's a definite, like, there's a whole scene where one of them was talking like James Mason. and it's just really bizarre. But yeah, I just don't know. The voices clearly were. Don't land until sort of late, like, you know, some of the later episodes.
Yeah, I that's clearly true. I mean, the roughness of a really Transformers product is part of its charm. I really love like the early comics and the early early cartoon depictions that haven't figured out that they're not drawing the toys yet. You know, where you see like a very like a depiction of Optimus Prime and it's clearly of the toy. Right, it's not the modified design, and I love that. Some of the early Transformers UK stuff does that a lot, the John Ridgway art for the early Transformers stuff does that a lot. And you're like, oh, that's the Starscream toy, you know. Yes. And I think it made it much more realistic for me. I really liked that. I liked that, like this was actually a thing that transformed. So yeah, I mean they're getting the voice stuff together. It's definitely a little rough.
Just on that, you mentioned the comics. I'll finish on this because we are at times. You've just rung a bell in my head, especially when you say about the Marvel UK, because Marvel UK did produce, and there's a whole history. There's a book to be written at some point about Marvel UK and some of the crazy shit they got away with the licensing and stuff, where they Marvel wouldn't let them have some of the main Marvel characters. So the editors were going, all right, we're going to go and just basically buy IP licenses for everything else we can get our hands on. And they obviously did Ghostbusters, Transformers, Zoids, loads of other stuff. But there's a story. There's like Transformers 2016, isn't there? There's sort of like it's quite a famous one. But I remember more than that. There was a car, and I'm sure it was called A Boy in His Car or something very similar. It's like a painted... I think it's drawn, penciled, but the colouring is done with paintings. Like it's like almost like a watercolour. And it was done only for Marvel UK. And I think it's either Jazz or Prowl is the car. It's not Bumblebee. It's another one. But there's a picture that it may be wrong in my head, but there's like a splash page or like a half a page of a Transformer, like an Autobot, hiding in the trees. And so, you know, we obviously in the movie when they sort of have that thing and they're hiding and all that other stuff, and Shia LaBeouf is right ripping them for it, like, what are you doing? It always makes me think of that story. Now, I haven't seen that in years, but that image is still pretty vivid in my head. And so those comics really did have an impact when I was a kid. So,
yeah, they had an impact on me, you know, and I had to get them through mail order. You know, I was like, oh my God, there's like 300 of these, and I didn't understand they were like 8 pages. You know, I was like, wait a minute, you get these weekly? Like, this is so awesome. And I was like, yeah, but a few other things to note. You noticed, you said that the voices are still being nailed down.
Yeah.
Like, and they're, how powerful the guns are and everything else. Like, there's this thing in early Transformers that fascinates me of them having superpowers. Mm. You know, so Mirage has invisibility. That's clearly important. Then suddenly in part three, never mentioned before, Skywarp has teleportation and Hound has holograms.
Yes.
And this is clearly this sort of like Marvel superhero holdover. And, you know, some of the characters seem to all fly. So they're still defining this. But it's clear that like that's evolving too, even over these episodes.
Oh yeah, this is very much being felt out, isn't it, to see what will work, what will stick and what won't stick. How it'll all work. But again, like you said, that's part of the charm actually, that some of this gets dropped and completely forgotten about and doesn't even get come up again. I mean, you know, one of the only other episodes I remember quite well from the first series is the one with the Dinobots.
Oh yeah, sure. The SOS Dinobots.
SOS Dinobots. And I remember that, and obviously being introduced to like Grimlock and you know all those, and having sort of like that thing with that. We're going, you know, even as a kid, going like, you know, with the cars and everything else, going, oh, they blend in. These dinosaurs don't. What is going on? Like this, you know, that thing of being like, not only do they not, they look like dinosaurs and they look cool. Like I had a Grimlock and I loved that Grimlock. And I think that even the toy was ace. I loved it.
Mm, mm-hmm.
But like in the cartoon, in the comic, like some of the comic design of Grimlock was awesome. And of the Dinobots. But even as a kid, like you said, like that usually doesn't make sense. But that was the first time that I was like, this doesn't make any sense. What's the point in transforming if you're going to become a massive dinosaur, robot dinosaur? Like, it just, what's
robots
the point?
In disguise,
yeah.
Featuring dinosaurs.
Why don't they now use that little satellite thing from before to go and find something new to transform into?
Right. Why don't they reassign their utmost? That never happens.
No, like all the others have done in the first episode. But yeah,
and I'm always bothered by that. I'm always bothered by how easy that is. You know, that you should have some discussion of like, you know, finding something equivalent mass, you know, equivalent shapes even. You know, and even in the Bay movies where, you know, they just scan something, it's like, okay, so, you know, it's so, like they don't even have to be in the Ark to be like rebuilt in any way.
Yeah, it's part of their own
ooh,
makeup.
Don't like that.
Yeah.
Another quick point. Before I move on, one is that I've never understood in any version of this story, and this is the version with the Ark crashing. This is my version. Why did the Decepticons leave the Ark? You know, like they're always like, "Oh, we're revived. Let's get out of here before the Autobots are revived. Kill them! Kill them! They're asleep." You know. And I think in the comics, it's just like, oh, we're low on energy. We need to, you know, that makes a little more sense. But, you know, I have explanations for how I would do this were I in charge. But finally, I just wanted to say that, you know, you were talking about how the guns have different strengths, which is very true. But also, it's true that the guns do different things, depending on whatever the script needs. So it's not just that they inflict damage of varying amounts. It's also that when Starscream shoots these turbines in episode 2 to make them do something else, how does that work? I have no idea. His energy shots transform what the turbines process or something. And then Ironhide gets Bumblebee in the back of his car.
I love
gun
that.
That's kind of like that is the gun that was in the actual toy, right?
Yeah.
So Bumblebee is manning that gun, all scale is messed up or whatever, to blast channels to divert the flood. How does that gun do that? Why this gun? And then you see like tons of water pouring down. It's like, I guess this gun is like the most powerful gun ever made to, and it carves rock. I don't know. It's so bizarre. Guns do whatever the script needs. That's the bottom line. Everything does what the script needs.
They're all a bit. All of the Autobots are a little bit Swiss Army knife, aren't they? Because you say, you know, Optimus Prime's hands go in and out, and they've got to become the hands or the headlights, but also there's an energy axe in there.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, a drill comes out of Ironhide's arm when he's trying to sort of get them out of the exploded mine. Yeah, they've all got different pieces like that, haven't they? Where it's sort of like all of a sudden, they're, like you say, they've got superpowers, or they're like a Swiss Army knife version. So yeah, and we've got to wrap up because we're sort of at time. Mm-hmm. But the final thing, just to say about toys, I've just remembered it. The moment rewatching these, I realized that we were being sold a toy was following the mine explosion. Like this, and this character is never mentioned before or after directly. Is when Optimus is rolling down the hill and sort of stuff, and he asks where Rover is.
Roller,
and the little thing comes out and runs in, and I think one of them just says, "He's a tough little Autobot," and he gets into the back of the van, into the back of the truck trailer, and never used in any of the episodes in the first mm-hmm. three, not even mentioned before this point, but you're damn right, he was part of the toy. Because
mm-hmm.
The cabin, the trailer used to sort of open up, and you'd have Roller in there, and that was the point where I was like, "Huh, now they're selling accessories! Brilliant! Like this is it. This is the toy set."
Yeah, like, "This is what the toy looks like." But you know, it's so weird because Roller, it's like, is Roller sentient?
I always thought he was like a bit like the droid,
a drone.
Yeah, like a drone kind of thing. Yeah.
No, I think that, and I think that's usually the canon. But you know, yeah, I mean, well, it's like Laserbeak's gun comes off and flies independently. Like, so bizarre, because they're like, "Well, why not? We don't know what this is." But it's like, oh yeah, those are those chrome pieces that fit in the tape holes in Laserbeak.
Yeah.
You know, this is sort of an accessory. But then, like, they don't show, there's other stuff they don't show. Like, you know, the cool repair bay of the trailer, Optimus never gets repaired, you know, vertically in that repair bay kind of thing.
And they have a scene, and they have a
very Star Wars looking thing inside there that pokes up through the top, never pokes up through the top. You never see that cool, like, Star Wars looking, you know, thing inside it.
And you have a perfect scene to try and do that when he comes down the hill. Like, it's right. Bizarre. Anyway, right. We shall wrap up there because we have covered. I think we could go on, you know, we could do a whole Transformers series. But I did enjoy going back to this. There is a nostalgia thing for these. I do enjoy Transformers. But anyway, Julian, thank you very much. This has been that bonus content. And ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have enjoyed revisiting the 1984 Gen 1 Transformers cartoon. Let us know. On the Patreon feed, like, what do you think about Gen 1 Transformers? Is this something that was nostalgic for you? Were you able to go back and do you cherish those cartoons? Or do you go back and go, "Oof, these have not aged well"? Let us know.
You can do both.
Yeah, you can enjoy them and still recognize that they're not great. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And thank you very much for supporting the Patreon. These are Patreon exclusives. And so, yeah, please enjoy. But anyway, thank you very much, and we shall see you on the next episode.